You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Sarah Marshall, and in this podcast, we take a look at drone journalism.
I'm Matt Waite. I'm a professor of journalism here at the College of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
2 years ago this summer, he was at a digital mapping conference in California when he came across a strange-looking object.
And it was this kind of styrofoam-bodied airplane that was maybe, you know, a meter and a half wide by about a meter long. It looked like a torpedo from a Star Trek episode is what it looked like. And I stopped and I watched their product demo video, and my mouth hit the floor. It was a tablet computer and an aircraft tethered together, where you pulled up this tablet computer, you drew a rectangle around the area you wanted it to photograph. You said, I'm going to take off from here and I want you to land here. You plug this information into the aircraft and whoop, off it went. And it just flew back and forth across that area, taking photos of it the whole time. When it landed, you pulled the memory card out of it, put it back in that tablet computer, and it would stitch those images together into a high-resolution composite image of the ground that was geo-rectified, and you could plug it right into your, you know, you could plug it into Google Earth or whatever geographic information system you wanted. And within minutes, you had a high-resolution aerial image of wherever you wanted. And I thought of every hurricane, flood, forest fire, tornado, you know, biblical event that I ever covered as a reporter. And I said, here it is. This is it. This is what we need. So I ran over to the guy and handed him my wallet. And I said, I'll take that one. And he laughed and said, well, they're $65,000 a piece. And oh, by the way, they're completely illegal in the United States. Well, I was disappointed, but I came back to the college here and started doing a little bit of research and found out that the civil aviation authorities here in the U.S., the FAA, were very slowly getting around to changing the rules that would allow for unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, drones, whatever you want to call them, in civil airspace. And that was enough for me. I went to the dean. I said, hey, I think this is going to be a thing, and I think we ought to start a drone lab. And he said, sure, let's do it. And I was expecting him to say, no, what are you, crazy? And he didn't. And that kind of left me on the hook for starting a drone lab.
And while the Drone Journalism Lab carries out tests in the US, this side of the pond, research is also taking place within the BBC. As Matt Waite mentioned, drones go by several names, and indeed the BBC does not call them drones.
You call them drones. We call them small remote-controlled multi-rotor helicopters. They're also called unmanned aerial systems in the UK. My name's Thomas Hannan, and I am the Senior Innovations Producer for the Global Video Unit, which is part of Global News.
So why doesn't the BBC like to call them drones?
Drones is a very wide term. It's sometimes used to imply military, covert, and kind of autonomous flying. And we're not doing that. So we're talking about flying small helicopters. They're very audible, they're controlled by us at all times, and they're not militarized.
So how much does it cost to buy one of these drones or small remote-controlled multi-rotor helicopters?
The costs vary quite a lot. So you could buy a kit online for about £500 that can be self-built, up to £10,000 for heavier copters.
For a few hundred dollars or, you know, a few hundred pounds, you can go onto Amazon and buy something called a Parrot AR drone, which is a toy. They sell it as a flying video game. You control it with your iPhone or your iPad or your Android device. It's controlled over a Wi-Fi, and if you tap into their developer SDK, the software development kit, you can actually control that thing autonomously. You can say, okay, go up 5 feet in the air and go forward 20 feet, and it will run that program. I have a little one here on my desk, just down out of the reach here, that's as big as the palm of my hand. You know, this thing's $30. You can get them wholesale on the internet. You know, we bought probably five or six of them just to fly around the building here, and they make for great trainers for students because they're $30 and you could crash them, who cares? In terms of things that journalists might actually use, now we're talking, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to, you know, as much as you want to spend, you know, $500,000. You go from the kind of DIY route where you can buy the parts, you can buy the kit, you can even buy it fully assembled. It will have autonomous capabilities. It will be able to lift a digital SLR camera in the air and get you stunning high-definition video. The battery life on those is 15 minutes. If the camera is bigger, if you want to carry a bigger lens, you're talking more like 10 or 8 minutes. That's pretty consistent across battery-powered platforms. You could spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a commercial product, then on the top of the line, normally reserved for the defense industry type stuff, and you may get 20 minutes of flight time out of it.
These are in no way a replacement for a news chopper. I mean, if you think about news helicopters, they fly at 120 knots. They can stay in a location for more than 2 hours. So these are a very different sort of tool. But equally, multirotors can fly indoors, so they have very different characteristics.
We'll hear more about the law and the rules in the UK and the US in a minute, but there's a reason that you're not allowed to fly them above people.
The blades on them are as wide as if you stretch a grown man's hand out from the tip of his thumb to the tip of his pinky. That's about how wide those blades are. When they get going, and there's four on the quad, there's six on a hex, when they get going, the thing sounds like a flying lawnmower. And if you were to get your hand in them or some other fleshy part of your body, you're going to get gashed pretty good, and you're going to have to go to the hospital and get some stitches. So we're not talking about a toy that, you know, if it were to kind of crash over a protest, people go, oh, gosh, you silly goose, you know, someone's going to get hurt. That all said, two things. One, there are lots of stories to do that don't involve flying over people's heads. And two, the technology is improving at a breathtaking speed.
So what kind of stories, those that don't involve flying over people's heads, offer the most promise in terms of journalism? Thomas Hannon again.
Initially, agriculture, geology, geography, anything in wide open spaces without dense population.
We've actually done one story with them that you can find on the interwebs. Nebraska last summer went through one of the worst droughts in its history, worse than the Dust Bowl droughts of the Great Depression. That we got so very little rain, and it had a pretty dramatic effect on the landscape. We went out with a small UAV out on a river that runs through the middle of Nebraska called the Platte River, and flew only about 350 feet in the air, which is below the limit that hobbyists can fly. And we were out in a rural area, not near anyone, and just aimed the camera up and down the river, and you could see that there was precious little water in the river. It was really just a sandy creek bed is what it looked like. You could see that, you know, dead and dry vegetation just extended off into the horizon. It was pretty dramatic to just do just that, just basically fly straight up in the air and get a wide look at an event that had, you know, kind of massive geographic scale. And I think that that's one of the real promises of using drones or UAVs, or again, whatever you want to call them, for journalism, that we'll be able to offer readers, viewers, a unique perspective on a news event, and help kind of put the scale of it into context for them in a way that, I'm pained to say this as a career reporter, but, you know, in a way that words just can't do. I think this will be a very, very useful tool for journalists in the very near future.
So now let's look at the law and the permits you need. Let's start in the UK.
You need a qualification called a BNUC-S. And this allows you to film within very specific limits. So, for example, you're allowed to film up to 400 feet up in the sky and a radius of about 500 metres away from you, a kind of circle from where you're sitting.
So where is the BBC at in terms of the permits, and what copters do they have?
I can tell you where we are within Global News. So we've purchased 3 craft, and myself and Owen Rich, one of my colleagues, have passed the BNUC-S flight exams. But that's just the beginning of the process, really. So from that point on, we're going to be looking at ways of filming with them and looking for stories that would be appropriate to film with them.
In the US, news outlets are not yet allowed to apply for the permits. That's at least 2 years away. But are the big news outlets readying themselves and looking at drones? I asked Matt Waite from the Drone Journalism Lab if he knew whether the likes of CNN, NBC and other big organisations were looking into them.
I can tell you from having been on conference calls with senior executives at most of those news organisations that you listed, the time will be the moment that it is legal, and they were able to get permits in the air. The bigger organizations are really interested in this and have been on my phone and in my email asking me about this. The bigger question there is, when might that happen? Congress mandated the FAA to come up with rules by September of 2015. That's the kind of end deadline for finished rules in place, permitting process up and going. Everybody's had their say on this. The final rules are issued. That's September of 2015. The FAA is already a year behind implementing that, and the law that mandated they be doing that was passed a year ago. So that's a bit of a problem. It's not so simple to say that in September of 2015, or let's say in September of 2016, let's say that they push it a year, that in October 1st, 2016, you'll be able to call up the local office of the FAA and say, I would like a permit to fly my UAV to do journalism, gimme. I don't believe that you're actually going to be able to do that then. And the reason for that is, this is America and we have an abundance of lawyers. And I think that once those regulations are put into place, everybody's going to sue everyone.
So does that mean in the UK we're ahead of the US in terms of getting drones in the sky for journalism?
I suppose you could put it like that. It depends. Certainly the UK has already got legislation that means that you're allowed to fly them within the limits that we've talked about. But until the US legislation is released, it's difficult to compare the two. So we'll have to wait and see what the US comes up with. But as it stands at the moment, yeah, you can fly them legally in the UK for certain applications.
So as the BBC is flying its copters, and as non-journalist hobbyists upload videos filmed by unmanned aircraft to YouTube, aerial videos of protests in Turkey, protests in Poland, and beautiful videos of Niagara Falls, is that not all incredibly frustrating for Matt Waite and those at the Drone Journalism Lab in the US?
I remain steadfast in my belief that this gap in time between when the technology exists for us to be able to do this and the regulation exists to be able to do this is a gift, as frustrating as it might be. This is one of the few instances where journalists are going to have the time and opportunity to consider how they might ethically use a tool, a digital tool, before that tool is thrust upon them.
And finally, how should we best spend that time?
This time that we have is time that we can consider what the ethical ramifications are. We can consider what the impacts to personal privacy are. We can consider what might be a good use of a UAV in a newsroom is and what it isn't. What we would do with it. You know, people keep talking to me, oh my God, when the paparazzi gets a hold of these things, they're just going to go crazy. And I'm like, well, A, the paparazzi already has them. They have a long history of really not caring what the law is, that, you know, being arrested and being fined by whatever regulator, is mad at them is really just cost of doing business for them. So UAVs have been used to photograph celebrities on the French Riviera. Somebody tried to use one to photograph Tina Turner's recent wedding. He never got in the air. He got arrested by the police before he got even a shot off. And then the image of the wedding that everybody is talking about that was from the air was from a manned aircraft, you know, same as it ever was. But I keep telling people that, you know, if you're wanting to stalk a celebrity with a UAV, the batteries last 15 minutes. Good luck. Those of us in the business who are particularly sensitive to ethics and good use and not wanting to alienate our audience by doing something stupid, this time is time we had better spend talking about those things and looking into them and discussing them and figuring out what we're going to do when that day comes that we can do this legally. And that way we're not learning the hard way, which is, you know, in court.
For more on drone journalism, there's a feature we published on journalism.co.uk back in June. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.